The Horseman's Corner is an original production of Howard Hale Broadcasting, on the air since 1994 with over 7,000 episodes with people involved in the world of horses. Visit horsemanscorner.com for more, including longer interviews exclusive to the web, full archives, our own equine podcast search engine, made possible by Van Hargis Horsemanship. I'm Howard's son, Brian, and we welcome you to the Horseman's Corner. We'll be back with today's guest right after this. Hey everyone, this is Brian Hale. If you've heard this program before, you know I have been offering website help for many years. In fact, we've been in the business for over 20, and we'd love to help you for anything website related, even if you just need some advice. It's free. Email support@halemultimedia.com or call 940-224-6315. Portfolio, pricing, and contacts all on halemultimedia.com.
Well, thanks for joining us for today's edition of the Horseman's Corner. I'm Howard Hale, host of the program, and my guest today is Tom Curtin. He is a horseman from Montana and, I guess, Florida as well, right?
Yes, sir. We kind of travel all over the country, but yes, sir. We spend some time in the southeast and all over. Yes, sir.
And what prompted this interview was an article that about you in the. It's an ongoing article, not done with it yet, I don't think, in the Eclectic Horseman. But before we get into that, give me some of your background, would you, Tom?
Yes, sir. Howard, I grew up in South Central Montana. My father had kind of an outfitting business and you know, run some stocker cattle and stuff like that. And then I left home at a pretty early age, and I got an opportunity to work on a lot of them big ranches and stuff because I'd start them colts. And Trina and I, when we got married, we worked on several of the largest ranches in the United States. We worked for the King Ranch, and we worked under Buster Welch, and worked at the Four Sixes, and got to travel around working on a lot of those operations because of the fact that we would ride and start them young horses. And it was just such a great opportunity to be around such great, great horsemen. And a lot of our background kind of stems from that. My father was, of course, a great horseman and a teamster. He did a lot of driving teams and stuff. So we were kind of around a lot of that, too. And it just kind of set the stage for everything. And then, in the late 80s, early 90s, probably late 80s, I guess it was, is when I met Ray Hunt. And Ray was kind enough to help me out in a lot of different places and give me an opportunity to kind of spend some time with him. So that kind of sums it up in short order there.
What'd you pick up from Buster Welch? Because Buster was great with the cutting horses, wasn't he?
He was, and he was great with the cattle and everything. I mean, how he could handle cattle horseback was unbelievable. But yes, sir, and to me, rode the greatest horses in the world. Them horses were just fabulous horses that we got to ride while we was there, and we kept a pretty good supply of cattle around. So handling cattle horseback was just kind of an everything that everyday deal that you did every day, you know. So it was a really good experience. I spent 2.5, almost 3 years there working for Buster in the cutting horse program and his cattle program both.
And as far as Ray Hunt is concerned, how did that shape what you do now?
Well, I started going to some of those clinics, and then Ray would ask me to come and ride some of his colts and stuff. And I hosted Ray, I think about 17 years we had hosted Ray and spent quite a bit of time around Ray. But Ray, what he did for me was teach me how to fix things. I never knew how to fix things with a horse. I could make things happen, but I didn't know how to fix things. And he was a great influence on that. And he's actually the one that kind of got me started doing these clinics. There was a lady that asked him one time what she would do after he was gone, and he said, "That young man over there may help you." And that was kind of the start of my clinic career and what we're doing today.
As I understand it, you just got back from a trip to Australia where you put on some clinics. Go into some of the details of what you were doing down there, would you?
Yes, sir. We did a couple of colt starting clinics, and then we did some horsemanship clinics and cow working clinics, and then I do a ranch roping clinic over there also. And this year was the seventh year that I had been over there, and those people are really, really, really serious about their horsemanship and interested in that style of horsemanship, which I speak of it more as a philosophy than a style or a method, really, Howard. What I'm trying to teach is more of a philosophy of trying to better understand what these horses need. And those folks over there put a lot of effort into that and have done a great, great job with their horsemanship.
And talk about the horses that they have over there. Did you get to deal with any of the Brumbies, or was it mostly domestic horses you were working with and giving clinics with?
Most all domestic. Every once in a while, somebody would show up maybe in a horsemanship class that had a little Brumby-type horse, but most all the horses over there were domestic-type horses and very well-bred horses, very, very nice horses.
What is the some quarter horse breeding, thoroughbred breeding? What do they have over there?
They got what they call their Australian stock horse, which is a kind of a cross of a little thoroughbred-type breeding with more of a cow horse, cutting horse type lines of the quarter horse.
And that's
kind of their main horse over there.
Pretty good horses then.
Very, very good horses. Yes, sir. They got some horses that very outstanding quality of horses. And, of course, they get horses shipped in from over here, and then, of course, the ship semen industry has helped the horse flesh, of course, in that part of the world too.
What about their cattle over there? There's some pretty big areas in parts of Australia and a lot of Australia. What kind of cattle work for them, or a little bit of everything?
That is real similar to the United States. It depends on the region you're in. The further you go north, the more tropical it gets, the more Brahmer influence you run into. The further you go south, you'll get into more your registered Angus or full-blooded Angus cattle or the Charolais, or they speak of a breed over there that's real common is what they call their Murray Grays. A lot of Hereford cross in the southern region of Australia. But when you start, as you start going north, and it don't take long, you start going north, you get more into tropical type area into Queensland and that area, and you start moving out up onto them northern coastlines and stuff. You get into a lot more of your Brahmer type cattle. Your Santa Gertrudis cattle are very influential in that part also.
Well, let's talk about what you were doing in the Eclectic Horseman, and if I remember correctly, and I may not be remembering correctly, but I believe you had 4 articles with pictures. They're working with a young horse, getting him saddled, getting him going. Talk about what you're trying to accomplish there, would you?
Basically, again, to me, when I'm working with them young horses, and that particular horse also, I'm working on trying to better understand the needs of those horses. See, to me, it's not about what I want from my horse. It's what does he need so that he can give me what I'd like to have because he wants to, not because he has to. And that's what's so important to me. And in the early stages of that article and up until to the latest article, basically we're working on trying to understand what he needs to get him ready for the next step. To me, it's not about the moment that we're actually working in so much as the moment that we're in, what can we do to prepare him for the next moment? And that's what I speak of is getting these horses ready. I'm not worried about, say, for example, riding that horse or even saddling that horse. I want to do things that I know that he needs that will help him get ready for that next step. And that's all I'm doing in that whole series of articles, and I'm trying to kind of explain it picture by picture there. Emily did such an outstanding job of taking those pictures, and I'm trying to explain what I'm feeling and what that horse is doing and trying to understand and what I can do to help him get better for the next moment.
How do you get to that point, or what are some of the keys to understanding what that horse needs and getting him to understand that and getting him on the same page with you?
Ray always talked about, and when I speak of Ray, I'm talking about Ray Hunt. Ray always talked about these horses doing what he spoke of is coming from the other side, Howard. He spoke of these horses coming from that other side and getting them to put some effort into it where your idea becomes theirs and their idea becomes yours, and trying to become one with these horses. And the probably the most valuable thing Ray ever said to him at one of those clinics, and he was talking to hundreds of people there that day, and he mentioned the fact that he said, all my job here at this clinic is to make sure that you folks understand how to be more aware of being aware. And I think that is so important. Start recognizing the things that that horse does and know what happens before it happens, so when it happened, you knew what happened. And he would mention those things, see? And trying to become more aware, and the more aware I got about things, the better this started to come together for me. And then, of course, there's the whole episode of it don't make any difference how many videos or books or things you read. You have to get out there and expose yourself to these animals and spend time with them. I mean, I'm very blessed. Trina and I, we talked the other day. We're pushing in the neighborhood of 8,000 to 9,000 head of colts that we've started over the last 25, 30 years. I guess 30 years that we've started together. And, of course, we've both started colts before that. But having that kind of exposure to those kind of numbers is what's important.
Need to take a break, but we'll be back with more interesting information from Tom Curtin in just a moment. You're listening to The Horseman's Corner.
Hey everyone, this is Brian Hale. If you've heard this program before, you know I have been offering website help for many years. In fact, we've been in the business for over 20, and we'd love to help you for anything website related, even if you just need some advice. It's free. Email support@halemultimedia.com or call 940-224-6315. Portfolio, pricing, and contacts all on halemultimedia.com.
Welcome back to the Horseman's Corner. I'm Howard Hale, host of the program. Let's continue with some really interesting information from Horseman Tom Curtin. And it doesn't do any good if you start 6,000 or 7,000 or 8,000 head of horses if you don't learn anything from them, does it?
No, sir. That's exactly right. I've seen folks, and I don't mean it disrespectful to no one, but I've seen folks that rode horses or handled cattle all their life, and they're not any better than the day they started, because they're not interested in changing. And I guess that's what keeps driving me is every day there's so much to be learned at these clinics. That's why I guess I enjoy doing my clinics as much as I do, is because I learn every day at those clinics as much, if not more, than most of the students that are in them.
Well, when you're trying to teach somebody something, it really gets your mind to working, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. They'll cause you to be creative.
What are some of the keys to, well, for one thing, the first thing you got to understand is the horse doesn't speak the same language that we do, does he?
No, sir, but he's sure interested in trying.
And what are some of the keys to learning the language of the horse, in your view?
Again, it's that awareness. I guess what helped me so much with these horses is I'd watch a horse do something, and then I'd hang around long enough to see what happened next. And it always intrigued me what happened next. So you was always kind of a little bit behind, but that was the learning process. And then I just started backing it up. I'd watch a horse do something, and then the next time I'd see him do that, I'd say, well, I know what's going to happen next, see, because I've seen it happen before. And it was just this awareness level is probably the most key factor in it along with exposing yourself to so many different horses. If you get to be around several different horses, and I know that can be difficult for some folks, but if they're really interested in this philosophy and understanding these horses coming from this point of view, you have to expose yourself because there's so many different situations. And see, a horse don't have a program, and they don't come with an owner's manual. They live their life by moments, and that's where we get caught up in trying to plan things out, and a lot of times that's why it don't work for a horse. See, we got all these plans, and he says, well, how come I didn't fit into that, or I didn't have no say in that, say? So that's what you're kind of dealing with there, and again, that awareness level is what's so key to this. Being able to shape and set these things up where it works out for both of you.
Is it interesting to watch horses interact with each other?
No doubt. It's interesting to watch them interact with each other. It's interesting to watch them interact with you. If you'll just take the time to allow them to interact with you instead of see what happens is so many times with the human is we have this agenda. We have this desire, we have this need that we think we have to have, and we're not willing to give to what maybe the horse needs. What he needs at that moment might not be what we feel like we should have, say, and that's where the horse gets in trouble so many times.
The mind is a very important thing with the horse, I would think. What do you need to do, or how do you get that mind going in the same direction you're trying to go? What are some of the keys there in your view?
The most important thing to me is being able to control the life of his body through his legs to his feet. Being able to get to his feet. If you can get to that horse's feet, you can help start to develop and change and get his mind to thinking. So many people get so caught up on working with just the mind of these horses. It's not in the mind. I never knew Tom Dorrance. I only got to meet him, and I was around him for a very, very short period of time, so I didn't get to know Tom. But the last thing Tom told me, he says, if there was ever such a thing as a secret to the horse, not that there is, he says, it's in the feet. So you're working on trying to, you can utilize those feet to get that horse to thinking and get to his mind. Does that kind of make sense what I'm talking about there? By being able to go through them feet, you can get that mind working for you.
Yes, but that's not necessarily just forcing the horse to move his feet, is it? How do you get those feet and the mind to work together?
Well, again, you start directing them feet. Say it's not, you're not just moving them feet or forcing them feet to move. That horse is going to move. He's got life in him anyway, and he's going to want to do some things. And one horse may have more life than the next. And as you start to direct that life in him and get into where you can kind of control and direct them feet, his mind is going to be right there. And I'll use loading a horse in the trailer, for example. You can get a horse to think about getting in that trailer all day long, and if you don't get his feet in there, you haven't done much. You're not going nowhere. But yet, if you can get that horse's feet to come alive and you start directing them and you get them feet to go in that trailer, I'll promise you that mind's going to be right there with it.
Okay, let's talk about one of the things that I read that you had to say that was really interesting to me. Kind of talk about lightness and softness and the difference, would you?
Yes, sir. A lightness can be built in a horse, and a horse learned this lightness in just a matter of seconds. And before you'll ever get softness in a horse, you will get some lightness. But just because a horse is soft don't mean he's light. And of course, if a horse is light, don't mean he's soft. I see a lot of horses get real light, and they're operating some to a certain degree out of fear of what might happen to them if they don't. You can make a horse be light. You can almost scare him into being light. You can never scare a horse into being soft. This softness that I'm talking about, he has to give you that. That's not something that you could ever take from him. And I see a lot of folks, they work in lightness with these horses. There's not a softness there. That horse is not willing to give that extra. He does what I speak of, is he operates, so to speak, out of kind of more of like a loyal soldier. He does what he's told to do, and he does it very lightly. He don't weigh much, but there's not a softness with the inside of him where he can turn loose and give you that extra that you need.
What are some of the things that you can see in that horse that tend to indicate that he has that softness, that he's soft on the inside and willingly wanting to go with you?
When those horses don't weigh anything and they have a complete understanding of what you're asking them to do, and they're not doing it because they're scared, they're doing it because they understand it, that's when you're going to have that softness. And you'll feel that come in these horses, and it may just come for a moment, go away, and what you try to do is you try to get that moment to show up more often than not. And that's kind of where I'm working at with these horses. But when he really understands something and he feels good about something, that'll show up on him coming from the inside.
How does that show up? What is there anything in his expression that I can see in that horse that tells me he's got that softness, not just light but soft?
I'll tell you, kind of a little gauge that you can go by, especially if you're riding that horse, is you might be able to pick up on them bridle reins a little bit and just have a feel of him there, but not pull his nose down and in. I see so many people when they go to working on this softness and stuff, they're trying to pull these horses' nose down and in. And them horses will never get soft. They just learn to flex at the pole and get light. But if you could get a little feel of that horse kind of right on the end of your bridle reins, and then you could kind of lift him with your legs, feet, and seat up into your hand and get that horse where you could ride him forward, stop him, and back him up, and not pick up and change anything in them bridle reins. In order to get to that spot, you're going to have a softness in that horse. And he's not going to weigh anything. And all softness is the beginning in the early stages of true collection. I see a lot of horses that are in a frame and they're flexed at the pole, but they're not collected. They're still using their front end to pull their back end.
You know what, this is some interesting stuff you're talking about, and this whole difference between softness and lightness is something that I think is difficult for most of us to understand.
I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm sure if as you get more aware of it and you get more sure of what you're looking for, And it happens for you a time or two, of course it's going to come through sooner for you, and it'll come to you a lot easier. But it's not something that's just going to fall out of the sky on you, and you're going to get moments of it, and you'll know when you get those moments, because you'll feel things that you've never felt before. You'll feel that horse start giving you those things that maybe you've never had before. And Ray mentioned a little something about that too at one time. He mentioned that you have to give something that you've never gave to be able to get something that you've never had.
You know, one of the interesting things, watched one of the trainers that worked out of my horse barn here, that guy that was really good, and he was working with a mule, and I think if I'm understanding what you're telling me, that mule got to the point where it had that real softness. Because it went from being, in the back of the pen to when the trainer'd show up, he was at the front of the pen, and it was kind of like, hey, what are we going to do today?
Exactly. Looking forward to going and doing what he needed to do because he wanted to do it, not because he had to do it.
Yeah, it and actually, when you watch the animal work, it looked like it was kind of an adventure for him, something that you could see it in the animal's expression. It was something he kind of enjoyed.
Yes, sir.
And I think if he would ask him to try to ride up a telephone pole, he'd have done it.
Yeah, or down a badger pole.
Well, that's just exactly right. But, Tom, let's take another break, and then we can come back and visit some more about horses and horsemanship. You're listening to The Horseman's Corner.
Hey, everyone. This is Brian Hale. If you've heard this program before, you know I have been offering website help for many years. In fact, we've been in the business for over 20, and we'd love to help you for anything website related, even if you just need some advice. It's free. email support@halemultimedia.com or call 940-224-6315. Portfolio pricing and contacts all on halemultimedia.com.
Well, we're back again for the third segment of today's program, today's Horseman's Corner. I'm Howard Hale, host of the show, and let's continue this interesting conversation about horses and horsemanship with Tom Curtin. Now, is it tougher to get through the horses to the horses or to the people?
Oh, it's easy to change these horses. You can change a horse. You can change a horse in a matter of minutes, right in front of your eyes. I'm not so sure we're going to ever be able to change some of these folks.
One of the things that I see sometimes, Tom, that kind of disturbs me is sometimes folks think, or maybe they misunderstand, that some of the clinicians are giving them a cookie-cutter approach. You do 1, 2, and 3, and you're going to get X, Y, and Z, and that's not necessarily the case, is it?
Well, no, and you know, I'm not speaking any one way or another, you know, but a lot of this stuff has been taught where it's real fitting for the human, but we still find the horses in trouble. What Ray taught and what I'm trying to teach and stuff, it's real. It's what I haven't found a horse yet it don't work on. It's not a, what we're teaching isn't really what you would speak of as like a Hollywood act or a phoniness to it or just a game to us. It's how one living thing presents itself to another is what it's about. So to me, you can kid yourself and you can kid the rest of the world, but your bottom line is you'll never kid these horses. You can't pull the wool over these horses' eyes. I mean, they know deep down inside. You know, you might not even know, but they know.
You know, we talk a lot about desensitizing the horse, and sometimes maybe we're creating a dullness, or maybe they get to a situation where they're spaced out. They're maybe doing what you want, but they're not paying any attention to you in reality. Their feet are moving, but their mind's not there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I would never want to desensitize my horses. I don't believe in desensitizing my horse. Matter of fact, I work very hard at creating more sensitive horses than unsensitive. I want that horse so sensitive that he can just sort of read my mind of what I'm doing. I want that horse very tuned in and very, very sensitive to what's going on around him.
Yeah, you can, in other words, what you do, I've heard maybe there's a difference between familiarize and desensitizing. Is that one way of putting it?
Yes, sir. The thing that I want to do with these horses, Howard, is I want to teach that horse that he has no doubt in his mind that I have the ability to keep him out of trouble. We're in whatever we're doing, we're in this together. And that I have the ability to help him feel good about himself and keep him out of trouble. I'm not interested in getting him where he's numb to things, because there's no way you can desensitize a horse to everything that he's going to encounter every moment of the rest of his life. It just don't work like that. That's not how these animals live life. You can't. You can get these horses numb, and like you say, they just go through the motions. They're just numb to things. I see a lot of people, they'll take a flag and they'll just flog these horses till they have nothing left of them. And the ones that accept it, they're great. And the ones that don't, they're rogues and crazy. And they just keep flogging them till there's nothing left of these horses mentally. And they just have no choice but to accept it. And they never get to feel good about things. It was never their idea to be that way. And they don't feel good. They just go through the motions. What I speak of is kind of loyal soldiers. They just do what they're told and accept it.
Well, and if you've got a horse out on the trail, you're going on a trail ride, you darn sure want one that's sensitive and aware of what's going on around him, don't you?
I do. The next person may not want that. They may just want to ride along there and just visit with the person behind them or in front of them, but I just soon have a horse that's very, very aware of what's going on, And of course, especially when it comes to handling livestock and doing different jobs and stuff, it really, really becomes important. But even on a trail ride, I'd like a horse very aware of his surroundings. But I'd like him to have no doubt in his mind that I have the ability to keep him out of trouble, that he don't have to feel bothered about anything.
Yeah, for you sure don't want one just walking off a cliff with you. If there's a problem there and you don't happen to see it, it's good if he sees it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And they're so much more sensitive, and they're 20 times more sensitive than the human, and are way ahead of what we're aware of for our surroundings.
You know, when it comes to, you also do some work with some stockmanship, don't you?
Yes, sir. We do a lot of that.
And what do you find in there when you're working with the cattle? How do you get people tuned? You got to be tuned into the cattle just like you got to be tuned into the horse, don't you?
Actually, Howard, even more so, because when you start working with these cattle, you don't have that advantage of that round pen where you can make that horse kind of do what you want him to do, or you don't have that advantage of that lead rope or them bridle reins. Everything you're doing is strictly off of feel, timing, and balance on them cattle.
And are people pretty accepting of what you're trying to teach them when it comes to better stockmanship, Tom?
It has become a lot better in the last 5 to 10 years than what it used to be, by all means, and it's going to get a lot better in the next coming 5 years due to being consumer driven. Howard, people want to know how their animals are handled. They want to know, and when I say people want to know that, I'm speaking of our consumers and stuff, the end product of this situation. Those people want to know how things are being handled and how things are being done. And I think it's very important, and better understanding these animals, all that's going to do is make that so much easier all the way through the process.
And it makes it more profitable if that animal handles easily, I would think.
The profit, we could get off into a whole nother interview on the profit of this thing. It's unbelievable, the difference in the profit.
Yeah.
We're talking hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars.
Yeah, because you don't wind up then with cattle that are bruised. You don't. There's a lot of things you don't wind up with, what are some of the things that you're working with the folks on the cattle handling? How do you go through that process?
It's just basically better understanding, and probably the most valuable thing on your cattle is understanding your position of where you need those things to go, and what things that you can do to keep them cattle feeling good about themselves, and things maybe that you shouldn't do so those cattle don't get the feeling where they have to protect themselves so much. And it's been really, really interesting for me to tie these two deals together with these horses and these cattle, because Tom always talked about how important straightness was in our horses. Tom and Ray did. And a gentleman, and I didn't get to know Bud. I was I regret it terribly that I never got to meet and spend any time with Bud Williams, but from the footage that I've watched of him and being around Miss Eunice, his wife, she's still alive, and the stories she tells and her daughter and son-in-law and the things they talk about, Bud could do with a cow what Ray or Tom could maybe do with a horse. And Bud was so adamant about straightness in these cattle. And what really put it all together for me, Howard, is when we were working for Buster always talked about keep that horse straight, go straight, stop straight, back straight, turn, go straight, stop straight, back straight. And this straightness that you built in these horses to better understand how to handle these cattle, what this straightness does is Bill promotes a sureness. When something gets straight, they get sure about things. When something gets sure about things, they get straight. One feeds the other. And when I started putting those two things together, this has been 30-some-odd years ago that Buster was helping us with this stuff, it's unbelievable what this has done. And then the more research that I do with just the cattle, how much better that makes them feel, this straightness. It's all tied together.
Tom, let's take our last break of the day, but you folks stay right along with us because I'm going to have a lot more interesting information from this conversation with horseman and stockman Tom Curtin. You're listening to the Horseman's Corner.
Hey everyone, this is Brian Hale. If you've heard this program before, you know I have been offering website help for many years. In fact, we've been in the business for over 20, and we'd love to help you for anything website related, even if you just need some advice. It's free. Email support@halemultimedia.com or call 940-224-6315. Portfolio, pricing, and contacts all on halemultimedia.com.
Welcome back to the Horseman's Corner. We're on the last segment of today's program. Gosh, good to have you folks along with us today. But let's continue our conversation with horseman and stockman Tom Curtin. It's interesting, Tom. I talked to a gentleman not too long ago that's very into the buffalo and does a good job of raising the buffalo, been raising them for years. I asked him if they were tough to get along with. He said, no, not if you take the time to understand them. And so, kind of same deal with the cattle, I would assume, where you're not trying to force them.
Exactly. And again, it's like Bud mentioned about this straightness, which was so intriguing to me. He says, you can't make your cattle be straight. But he says, you can position yourself and do things to allow your cattle the opportunity to be straight. And as they get straight, they'll look for that more often than not. And they'll perform and handle so much better.
What do you do? Do you go to some feedlots or ranches and talk about stockmanship as well as your horsemanship clinics?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We've done some stuff at different feedlots, and we've done some stuff at some backgrounding and order buying services. And then, of course, I've worked cattle on ranches all over North America, South America, and down into Australia and all over. So we've worked on a lot of ranches with the cattle all over the United States and like I say, North America, Canada. We've worked cattle in Canada and Mexico and South America. So it don't seem to make any difference where you go, though. It's you're still working on the same philosophy of better understanding what these animals need. If you can figure out what that cow needs, there's nothing she won't do for you.
Hey, talk about the ranch roping a little bit and what we're talking about there and how you go about one of your ranch roping clinics, would you?
Probably the most interesting thing about our ranch roping clinics is once we kind of get started, we actually, you know, I go over a few of the basic shots and I'll work with anybody if they want to work on more advanced shots. That's not a problem. But my main goal is getting people to understand their basic angles and their basic shots and get them to where they're catching cattle. And I never did a ranch roping clinic for years on the road because I never quite felt like you could get 8 or 10 people and they actually gain something and be safe. And it took me a long time, but when I was at the house, when we were at our place in Montana, and both in Montana and Florida, I would get people to come, and I might get 2 or 3 people show up, and we might all be riding colts. And 2 or 3 of us would get in a real small round pen, and we'd start moving them cattle around and stuff. And we kind of made us a rule, only one person ropes at a time. And when somebody caught something, the safest place to be was right at that horse's tail that the person had the animal caught. And, of course, we always roped with breakaways, so there'd be basically 3 of us in there with 60-foot of rope each and in a 50-foot round pen. You'd never think something like that would work. But it was amazing what those horses could get to doing. Keep it simple and never upset your cattle. The stress on it was real low and allow them horses to kind of learn things and the people to learn things, how to be safe. and how to handle their ropes and get coiled up and not be scared to let go of that rope a little bit. So that round pen and working in that round pen, getting people started and getting young horses started, has been such a great contribution to our ranch roping clinics.
So you're getting that horse exposed to roping pretty early in the game then?
Oh, we'll rope off them horses in the third and fourth ride.
Yeah, and that makes some sense. Talk about some of the advantages of doing that. Why do you get to roping off from them in the third or fourth ride?
Well, the thing about it is, it's like anything that you're presenting to these horses. The longer you hold off on it, the more unsure they're going to be about it. So you can expose those horses and keep it interesting for them and give them a job to do, instead of maybe going out there and just repeating the same thing over and over and over, where it becomes meaningless to that horse and he has no purpose in what he's doing. You can keep this interested in these horses and keep them kind of involved in progressing. That's, to me, is what all this is about.
Yeah, and how do you keep those, and you got to be capable of keeping those cattle quiet when you're doing this too, don't you?
Yes, sir, and that's not much trouble. I mean, you can take some cattle that are a little sensitive and kind of a little touchy, and you can spend a little time on the outside of your round pen with your colt, just kind of moving around and kind of influence them cattle and position them in different places in that round pen, and it won't take you long, and you can get in there with them, and they're not going to be upset at all about things.
You know, would it be a good idea to... Well, one of the benefits, I would think, of you starting to rope on those colts so early, then when they get used to rope and maybe get used to the feel of rope on their feet and legs, and because there's going to be some times when it's around them, they're not so likely to get hurt if they get hung up in something, are they?
No, that's right. It really exposes those horses and really prepares them for so many things that liable to take place in their life on down the road. And it really sets them horses up to succeed when you can kind of expose them to those type of things in them early stages like that. It's really endless to what it prepares them for.
What age do you like to have your horses when you start working with them?
Most of these colts, my personal colts and stuff, I'll start those in their probably 22 to 24 month range in there. I'll get those colts kind of started, and I don't put a lot of time in on them. If I get a week's riding on them or 2 weeks riding on them, a lot of times I'll take those colts and maybe even turn them back out for 3 to 6 months and then get them up and kind of go on with them a little bit there. We start a lot of young horses for the cutting horse industry, and they like those things to build up and go on into a program and stuff. So we're starting a lot of those horses in the 20, 22-month age. I think that's a little young, but, you know, the thing about it is you don't have to get these horses out there and try to make a big old long day on them or try to just wear it plumb off of them, you know, so that you can kind of take these horses and build them up. And I mean, it wouldn't bother me to start a little yearling under saddle if you had the right person that could kind of just get on it and rub it and pet it and sit around on it in the round pen. You know, that to me, it the age of it's irrelevant. It's understanding what they need at that moment and not trying to overexpose them or take them past that.
Yeah, and you don't want to, where they're not developed, you don't want to get to working them hard and you hurt them, do you?
No, that's right. And I mean, I grew up in a country where a lot of times we didn't start anything till it was probably latter part of its 5-year-old year, and a lot of horses that were 6 and 7, you know, that was not uncommon where I grew up to start them horses at that age. And basically you started them horses and you went on and you did a job with them. You just started right into their work life, and they were pretty well mature physically and mature in their mouth, and everything was kind of set up and ready to go, you know. But it sure makes it a lot easier, seems like, on them or and people both if they can start a little bit younger and do a little bit along and along and not just try to make a big hard day on them horses.
Yeah, because can sometimes those 5-6-year-old horses be a little bit of a challenge?
No doubt. You know, I mean, and I guess I was pretty blessed, you know, because it didn't bother me much what them horses did. You just kind of got on them, and if they wanted to run, if they thought they were in trouble and got scared and felt like they needed to run off, you just went with them horses. I mean, it was no big deal. You just rode along with them. I mean, if they went right, you went right. If they went left, you went left, you know, and they went up, then you went up, and you went up, and if they went down, you go down, you know. You just kind of learn to fit those horses, and next thing you know, they'd start fitting you.
Hey, is there anything that you'd like to add before we close this out? Gosh, I've taken a lot of your time, and I really appreciate you taking so much time. But anything you'd like to add that I haven't asked you about, that I haven't thought of?
Well, I'm sure there might be something out there, but I think we've covered quite a bit of it. But again, I try to get people to understand, don't get caught up in a discipline, don't get caught up in a particular maneuver, because that's not what this is about for these horses. What it is trying to better understand what they need at that moment so that they would do what you would like them to do because they want to, not because they have to. And I think that's probably the most valuable thing that Ray helped me with, and of course a lot of these other guys too, don't get me wrong. I was so blessed to be around so many great horsemen and have such an influence from all of them. So,
I guess one of the things you're saying is don't try to fit a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah, I did that for years, Howard. It didn't work then. It's probably not going to work in the morning.
Yeah, it's kind of silly to try to make a cutting horse out of a Percheron or pull a wagon with an 800-pound reining type horse.
No doubt. That's why I tell people all the time, if you're going to go work cattle, you're probably not going to take a Labrador to retrieve a cow, and you're probably not going to take a Border Collie to gather a duck.
Well, Tom, thanks a lot. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. And gosh, I'm sure there's some stuff that I'll think of that I should ask you about while I had you on the phone, but if you don't mind, if I think of something, I'll give you a call on down the road. We'll do it again.
Yes, sir. I would really enjoy that, and I appreciate your interest and your time in putting this stuff out there. It's really, really important, and I'm very thankful for you folks that do that.
Horseman Tom Curtin, some really interesting information, and this was a repeat of a program that I had ran once about a year ago. But really good information from Tom Curtin, good horseman, and still has that ongoing series in the Eclectic Horseman. So if you get a chance, go to the Eclectic Horseman, subscribe to it, and you can get more from horse people like Tom Curtin. Really excellent information. Well, thanks for joining us for today's edition of the Horseman's Corner. Always great to have you folks along with us on the program. And there is a lot more on the web by going to horsemanscorner.com. That does it for today's edition. I'm Howard Hale, host of the program. I'll say goodbye. May God bless. See you next week, same time, same place.